Oh, I almost did it again.
It's a two button start, not a one button.
Oh, should I make a note of that?
What?
It's a two button start.
Actually, you know what I'm saying?
The on button.
No, I was going to say, I'm going to make sure you label everything correctly.
The food part down.
There's a few things that you just can't mess up.
Much better.
You're your own librarian.
This song is your happy place. You know that's what's most in our mind.
You're your own librarian. You don't have to have
everything. And if you said those are here, we're so close to the
tan.
Howard is on his way, but I know you're going to
win. Gonna race some of those lies.
I'm gonna make Ellen first.
I had so many lines. She's like, I'll rewrite it with Dan 10 years. That'll look good.
Put in the Great Lakes, for God's sake.
This is a shorter thing.
You want the Great Lakes?
What are you going over? It's utterly ridiculous.
That's pretty nice.
Let's try it.
This is a data pool. This is not an artistic rendition. I can do an artistic rendition, but it'll take me 10 minutes.
No. Oh, it's not a clutter. It's text.
You should probably hold the prize with you.
Are you satisfied?
I'm here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, Eric, are you beginning now?
Well, I'll do what I do with the 6-year-olds. Ready?
No, wait a minute, Eric.
We're all here.
Welcome to the 2010 Producers and Organizers Special Interest Group pre-conference on whatever the hell it's on. We have from now until noon, approximately. The coffee is there, the hot water is there, the food, health conscious, I will point out, is there. Expensively health conscious is there. We are in the room. The basic mechanism is this. Ellen's going to talk a little. I'm going to talk a little. Eric is going to talk a little. Sean is going to talk a little. Sean and Eric actually have like practical things. Ellen and I have...
Eric, I hope you got that covered.
Ellen and I have fundamental philosophical and structural things to talk about. Somewhere along the line, there's room for everybody to chat, to ask questions. There may even be an opportunity for us to talk about the producers and organizers sing in some kind of a way. If you are not a member of the Producers and Organizers SIG, I want to have a conversation with you. Right. So, but we're going to start off with Eric. Eric, you're going to start off. We're going to do some data collection because fundamental to all good producers and organizers, to all good storytelling organizations, and activities is... get the data. Right? And so, Eric, you're going to start.
Counting 23, am I wrong? Are there 23 people in this
what?
Room?
Then you have to use that's the data.
Right, well, we'll get to that part.
Sure, it's important.
Are there 23 people in this room?
I'm number 17. So, beyond that, I don't know.
Stick to the question.
Roughly. We'll say yes. We don't know.
Okay. All right, so I just want to know, just raise your hand. If you would define yourself as an organizer of storytelling events, raise your hand. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
You are.
Up or down. Up or down. No have.
What?
1, 2, 3, 4. Just look over here and be like, don't tell you what raise your hand.
9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. So we have 14 of us who are organizers of events. If you are associated with a festival, meaning that you work on the board or are a festival, you know, you would, if somebody said, are you with this festival? You answered yes. Raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
I have no role.
Now, it's really interesting to me because there are different hands up. People did not say, those are different, you know. So now I'm really curious. I want to know if you... only put your hand up for one of these things. Raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's really interesting. So 6 people.
Organizing festival.
Right.
Yeah.
Organizing.
Yeah. Oh, we're getting there. Slow down. If you define yourself as someone who tells stories, a storyteller, raise your hand.
Let's hope.
18.
So,
18, all right. I'm not going to ask the question, which is kind of obvious to me. Do you love stories? Because everyone's going to go. But what other questions should I be asking? Should I be collecting here? I just started us off. What are some other questions?
Associated with a conference, perhaps?
Associated with a conference. Okay, so can I write conference? Is that all right?
Sure.
Anyway? Notice my.
And that could be the conference could be a regional or a state or the national conference.
Or associated with a nonprofit organization which has an annual fundraiser, which is.
That's a separate nonprofit.
Oh, okay.
It's a big family tree here. Yeah.
You can also just have other events besides conference and festival.
Yeah.
Sort of lumpus into what.
I would like to know who here is associated with a dinner theater.
I'd like to know how many people are producing radio or TV programming around storytelling.
Okay, can I say audio? So it includes us podcasts at all?
Yeah, media production.
So if you're involved in media production, any other questions people want to know? Yes?
I want to know how many people have either volunteer or paid staff that do their web or social media work.
Can I separate that?
No, you can't.
Okay.
Volunteer or paid
internet, social media, web people, anybody on staff. Okay, does it have to be internet? So can it just be paid staff? You want internet?
No, I want to know specifically about people doing internet work.
Wow. Okay.
Don't stress me out, Eric.
I'm trying to get I'm thinking it's going to be a very small number. I'm trying to get the number bigger.
That's good.
Yes.
I like small.
No, you watched it.
It's a matter of degree, but how often are you creating festivals, or how often are you organizing?
Now we're getting into sub data.
Yeah.
So, but and that's important. That's a valuable
timeline.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, I'm just gonna write how often.
I want to point out something about the how often question, because see, it is not a question you can just simply raise your hand for. We have to then define categories.
I'm ahead of you. All right.
Oh, I know you're ahead of me.
Let's do who is personally connected. I'm sorry. Conference is the first question. Who is associated with a conference?
I'm still
one,
thinking
two,
about
three, four,
order.
Five, seven, eight, nine.
I'm not doing it right this second.
So we got nine.
Yeah.
Who is associated with a nonprofit? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. That's a lot more people than I expected. Who is associated with dinner theater in some way? Oh, actually, I am. Damn.
Yeah, are you counting yourself?
Have you been counting yourself in the other?
Yes.
Right.
I've been counting myself continuously.
Okay.
Media production. Who is involved in media production? My hands have way too much. One, two, three, four, five. Okay, it's five.
I'm sort of in the iffy.
How do you define media production?
Yeah.
Who has
self-defined it at this point?
Radio show, TV show, podcast.
I
guess YouTube if you want them to put it in.
Okay, who has volunteered paid staff in internet media? Their internet media component has a volunteer or paid staff.
This is a very, say the question, please.
I want to know, do you specifically have someone on your staff, paid or volunteer, that their primary responsibility is web, social media, internet?
Outside of one person.
Is there another person on your staff, volunteer or paid, who is specifically associated with the internet?
And is that the website that you need to
remember? Okay, hands up, please.
Yes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Many more than
that. Wow, yeah, it is many more than
that. Yes, but you're spending time meeting with the same organization. We're all talking about the same person.
I was about to suggest.
Okay, last question. How often? What was the nature of the question? Do you want to know how often? Yeah, how often?
Is it an annual festival? Is it a monthly slam?
So you're asking the question: how often do you organize events?
Right.
Right. So I'm going to ask the question first. What I'm going to do is, I don't know how to collect this data on this little space.
No. Okay. All right. I think the way to do it would be do event monthly events,
quarterly,
biannual, or annual.
I thought the way was to count from 10 to 1 going down, and people raise their hand when you get to the number of events you do in a year.
Oh, well, then start with 12. Unless your year only has 10 months.
But then there are people here who do more events. Who organize more. Does anyone organize more than 12 events a year?
Whoa. See?
Look at that. Wow.
Look, you can count them and write it down.
All right, more than 12. More than 12. Three people. All right.
All right, 12.
Four.
More than 12, three? Yep.
Four.
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 I just forgot to raise my
hand. All right. More than eight.
Where does our focus come?
Raise your hand if you have more than eight. Oh, people just raise their hand. Raise their hand. Everybody. Oh, everybody whose hand was just up should be up.
Okay.
More than eight. Raise your hand.
Are you counting?
Yeah. If your hand is already up.
Put up the other arm.
Okay. Wait, it's not. I just want to be clear. I asked you now. I'm getting distracted. If you have...
Storytellers do math.
If you do between 8 and 12 events.
Okay. If you do between 8 and 12 events, raise your hand.
More than 12.
4.
All right. If you do between 4 and 8 events.
Clarification.
Yes.
Is this counting monthly story swap?
Yeah. Yeah. It's an event, right?
Okay.
Okay. I guess I'm actually on this.
I should have been up.
4. So I got that. 8 and 12. What's the next one you asked?
All right. Okay.
4 and 8.
Between 4 and 8. 4 and 8 events a year.
Oh, I see.
What's the number?
The number formed between 4 and 8? The number is what? 1, 2, 3?
4?
4?
The number is between 4 and 8.
Right. Okay. Now, the number is between... The number is between 2 and 4. 2 and 4?
It's quarterly.
Okay. 1. And 1 event a year. People who do, anyone, 1 event a year. So we, 2, 3.
3. Good. I'm actually going to add myself to this first number.
And that's actually the organization process, right?
That's fine. That's fine. Okay.
All right. If anybody needs to translate the math, let me know.
All right. Now, as Ellen points out, you know, collecting data is one thing, using data is another. But in fact, this information gives us a large sort of geographic for this discussion. What we're talking about, in part, and I just kind of want to do the large frame here now.
That's fine.
Yeah. Is this pre-conference came out of the question about... There was two separate questions that repeatedly came up, and they're actually interconnected. One question is, how the hell do we actually talk to the 20 to 40-year-olds who don't seem to be present at festivals or at a lot of events that we're used to doing, right? And so we Ellen and I, and Ellen specifically is going to talk in part to that question. The other question that came up is a question about, you know, how do we utilize the web? How do we, you know, is there, the way the question originally was framed is there a value in utilizing the web?
Yeah.
But, of course, my experience, and I'm going to talk specifically based on out of a conference that I was at in Madison in May, is you have to be on the web. It is simply the reality. And so the question is not whether or not you're on the web, the question is how are you on the web? And so I'm going to speak a little bit to that, and then Eric and Sean are going to speak more explicitly to that in terms of, you know, I'm going to speak to the necessity of it, and they're going to talk about the techniques and the results. Okay, that's what prompted us to come together. As you can see from this, in terms of how you would make application for this discussion, there's lots of different ways of and needs in terms of interpreting it. So what you should think about for today in these few hours we have is that take what is of value to you immediately and put it to use, and recognize that we're not done with the conversation by any means, and that Sean and Eric and Ellen, myself, are all willing and a number of other people in the room who have specific expertise are more than willing to continue the conversation both here at this conference and in other places and other times. And so we should think about that. I have to do one piece of data collection. Two pieces, actually. Two questions, data collection questions I'm obligated for. Number one, question number one, how many people are a member of the Producers and Organizers SIG? So, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10, okay, that's good. Now, for those of you who are not members of the SIG, again, we need to have a conversation. And people who know me know it's better for you to come to me on your own than to have me ask you to take a walk.
Or hide.
And I would like to point out one of the ways we can continue the conversation is that members of the ProSig have a listserv. And so that if you have a problem with whatever, you could ask the membership. I have a horrible board member. How do you get an article in the newspaper? Whatever. And you can get responses from across the world, across the country.
And there's no trade secrets on there. I mean, really, anything is up for discussion. So it's awesome.
There have been great responses, too.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so now I've had another question added to the mix, and I've got a third question. So let me go through the questions very quickly here. My second question is, how many people are members of the National Storytelling Network? Trust me, there are some people whose membership have lapsed, and you need to check on that. And
yeah, talk to me.
Talk to Judy and to Loretta. If you are not a member, or are not current? Because I got a list here. It's telling me. Thank you. It's better that you do it voluntarily than they have me take you for a walk.
Judy looks nice, but she's scary too.
Okay. Nancy has requested me to ask how many people who are here now are going to be in the master class this afternoon, Nancy?
The Artistic Vision master class this afternoon, which is tied to a lot of this discussion.
Oh, great. Okay, so three.
I'll take the rest of you for a walk.
Or we can recruit as we go along.
What about Diane's thing? She's doing a thing on social media. Anybody in this room going to be there?
Okay. All right, so these people all think they're immune from that. All right, and so here's my last question. My last data question is, not everybody in this room knows everybody else, so we're going to go around the room. I want you to introduce yourself. Do not talk about your programs. Do not talk about your organizations. That will be part of the ongoing discussion. And it takes up way too much time once we start getting into that. So all I want is your name and where you are from. Okay? Yep, because, if we go... Could you flip back the page?
Yes.
Please. Because if we flip back to the extremely bad drawing of the United States... As you identify, at some point in the process, some point today, put your,
She's going to write them up as you say it.
Oh, she's going to, okay.
Really?
Mark them where, and again, just sort of X them or something, where people are from, so we can see what the geographic spread is.
In the spot.
All right, and would you start?
Karen Ray Kraut, Riverside, California.
All right.
Which way are we going? Oh, Jeff.
Oh, that would be Jeff Gear from Hawaii.
They didn't.
Woo. I read them to myself.
Linda Yamoto, Oakland, California.
Loretta Phillips, Andover, New Hampshire.
It's somewhere
up there.
Yeah. That's me. You're not in Canada yet. That's good.
Do you see my Detroit, Michigan?
No.
On the other side, above our
by the lake.
There.
By the lake.
There.
That's all me in the way of theory.
I'm with you.
Yeah, really.
That's the great thing.
Jane Krause, Richmond, Virginia. Or Chesterfield. No, a little higher. A little higher. Right here. Right here.
You're going to geography lesson.
And it's you can say it's outside of Richmond. It's Chesterfield, but it's Richmond. Metro Richmond. 45 minutes away.
Ellie Shinham, Baltimore. And I can be right above Jane.
Yeah. Really? No, over.
Well, over towards the coast.
Toward the coast.
Yeah, because you.
Too high.
Too. Okay. Yeah, you got her in Delaware now.
Yeah, that's her.
We need you in Baltimore. We need you in Baltimore.
Okay, where are we going?
Ellen Munns, Indianapolis.
You're closer here.
Yeah.
There. All right, drop down 2 inches for
Mary Hamilton, Kentucky. Just put me under Aaron and Ellen, under Ellen and Eric. Got it.
Okay, Eric's already on.
Sean Guevala, Phoenix, Arizona. Oh no!
Down.
Next to you,
right there.
Dixieville Tour, San Francisco.
Hey, Mary, can you switch colors?
Hi.
That's not Mary. Sorry, Mary.
Karen,
could you switch colors?
Oh, yes. Oh, they were right here. Damn.
Oh, well, I didn't know we had a color.
All right.
I want to circle my name.
Okay, Rebecca Martin, Los Angeles, next to you.
Mary Ferranti, Antioch, California. It's east of Oakland by
30 minutes.
Ferrante, double R.
Marilyn Rusick, Mariposa, California.
Rusik.
What?
Your last name, how do you spell it?
Rusick, Rudzik, but it's pronounced Rusick without the D.
Glynis Brooks, Los Angeles, New Jersey.
Jenna Lowe, Orem, Utah.
L-O-W-E?
Louie.
Kate Dudding, Albany, New York. Find Loretta and go southwest. Up a little, yeah. Good.
Close enough.
We're not going to use it to get there.
I'm glad it's established.
Tim Araneta, Berkeley, California.
Mike Speller, Chicago, Illinois. Sure.
Nancy Donable, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
So up above
Ellen.
Up above Ellen there. And I'm Lauren Neamy, Minneapolis, Minnesota. All right, Ellen.
I'm just going to give you a little background. I'm fortunate enough in Indianapolis, our Arts Council of Indianapolis has spent 6 years working with a consultant, Rebecca Ryan, from Minnesota, on Generation X and how to get Generation X more involved in the arts. Because Generation X, when they don't look for a job and then move to the job, they go to where they want to live. And then they find a job, and if you ask them why they picked a place, one of the things they will say is because of the arts, but then they don't attend. Rebecca Ryan from Generation X Consulting, she spent quite a bit of time in Indianapolis conducting interviews with Generation X and finding what they were looking for as far as the arts go. And then she worked with all the arts organizations in Indianapolis for 6 years, and we had two summits, two conferences, and Lauren went to the second one with me. So what do you think is the number one reason why someone between the ages of 20 and 40 go to an arts event?
To meet someone.
They have a blog.
What? I'm sorry.
For fun?
No, that's not the number one. That's the number two, kind of.
For their kids?
No.
Social?
For learning. For learning.
Really?
Yes. And I've got this all written down. I've got this all written down for you in a handout, so you really don't have to take it. But number two is for socializing. Mm-hmm. Number three is for the art or the arts organization. So we're down on the list. And to be honest, Generation X doesn't care if you're a non-for-profit or if you're a for-profit. Mm. So they, for them, art is going to a rock concert. True. Art is going to
stand-up comedy club.
Yeah, going to a movie. Supporting the arts for them is buying a CD of the artist, buying a T-shirt. So you need to be thinking about all those kinds of things. So you have to think about. If learning is the number one thing, they don't want to come and just sit and listen. They want to interact. That's really, so they break it down, so Rebecca Ryan breaks it down to being like high sensing, high learning, and high connecting. Sensing, learning, connecting. And the one thing that most of us in the room who are not in the Generation X that we have in common with Generation X's, they find out about events from their friends. That's the number one. Radio and television is way at the bottom. The internet is higher up. So, and I'm going through this really fast, but
what does high sensing mean? What is
high, like multi-sensory? Like they want to have multi things going on. So an example of that is an orchestra in Cleveland called the Red Orchestra, and you can go to their website. And I mean, they've had their shows on Second Life. They did dead music, and everybody dressed up in dead, you know, T-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's more than just.
It's an event.
It's an event, right? Mm. And something else that's really important to know is. Well, I'll come back to that. Never mind. So, if word of mouth is the number one thing, what are some things that we could do to help with word of mouth, to get the word out about word of mouth?
Well, first you got to get some of them to show up, so that then they have something to tell their friends.
Right. So you have to create an event that they want to come to. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You got to hire one of them to run your
on your VR.
You could go to where they're already going. Do
yes.
an event where they are already going.
Yes. You can also...
Wait, let's stop for a moment. And where are they already going?
There you go.
And where are they already going? You are of this generation, I believe. Where do you
national
go?
National conferences.
I may be an outlier because I'm already here.
What, but no, but... Where do you go?
Coffee
house. Okay. Where else?
Bars.
Sometimes on the way home, they're on their way home, so if it's something they can stop to on
okay.
their way home.
For more. Yeah.
All right.
When we met with 20-somethings, they said open mic nights.
Open mic nights. Oh. Story slams, right?
Poetry slams.
Yeah.
Poetry
slams. Anyone? Poetry slams, right? Anyone? At some point, we should have, I don't know if Loretta, you want to do it, or someone else wants to talk about mass mouth,
yeah.
You know, as a model, right, for creating an event that one of the things that's interesting about MassMouth is that it has been in multiple locations. It may be the same organizational experience, but it has been in multiple locations, and in each location, you know, it's been in a bar or a restaurant or a library, but it's been in a place that is readily accessible and on the social radar path.
There's also, in that generation, it's probably true in all generations, there are people that are instigators and there are followers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you want to find the instigators. Those are the people who organize their friends to go to events. Now, there's not a set way in trying to find them, but when you those are the people you want to become your friends. Now, something that we haven't talked about, a simple way is if you're out and you meet somebody who's in their 20s or 30s, give them two comp tickets to an event. Mm-hmm. Rebecca Ryan even suggests having your business card be the reverse side as a comp ticket to an event.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Wow.
So you can select, you can, you know, kind of hand pick. Now, Indianapolis, and this is probably true in other cities, as a result of Rebecca Ryan doing work in the life sciences in Indianapolis and in the arts community, we now have a group called Indie Hub. And it's for the Generation X, people coming into the city to live, and it's a way for them to connect with each other. So like a lot of arts organizations are now creating events with Indie Hub to get them involved.
So that's sort of a Gen X newcomers?
Yeah, and they're professionals, and they've come to town for, you know, they've moved there for a job or whatever, and or they've decided to live there, and they're working, so they can connect with each other and get involved in the community.
Sort of a welcome wagon.
Yeah, kind of, yes. Yes, so they have, like, they'll have, I haven't done a specific event with them yet, but, like, they'll have, we have, they get funded a passport to, like, seven arts organizations in town, the big seven. And so you can buy a passport, which gives you, they're much cheaper, and you get one ticket to each of the big seven organizations. Mm. And there's a specific night when Indie Hub people will go to that, like, let's say the opera. So there will be an event tied to that. They'll have a cash bar. They'll get to go behind the stage and meet the artists. Mm, wow. They'll get to do all these things on specific nights. And that ties in with the learning, the socializing. Mm. There's also a woman in South Carolina, and I have this on my notes, where they have a dozen Generation X people sign up a year, and they actually go and spend 2 or 3 days with each arts organization before they attend an event from that arts organization. So they'll meet the artists, but on it, because people don't know, if you're not used to going to the arts, you don't know how to behave, you don't know what to expect. And I remember in Indianapolis, I meet with the arts marketers. It's all the marketing people in Indianapolis. We meet once a month, and our repertory theater, the marketing person there said, you know, there are so many people who don't know how to behave or are uncomfortable going to a play. And I'm thinking, my gosh, if people don't know how to go to a play, they really don't know what to expect when they're going to a storytelling event. So, I mean, we really have I thought everybody knew how to go to the theater, but they don't. So by creating events like with the passport or the event in South Carolina, that event is called Columbia's New Audience Roadshow. Columbia's New Audience Roadshow. They go and like they might see a rehearsal. They'll talk to the costume person at the theater. They'll get to talk to the artist. They get to do all. And so that way, the people who are involved in the roadshow, they're much more comfortable when they go to new arts events because they go from one arts organization to another. Emails and listservs are, like, at the top when it comes to Generation X. So, and websites. That's where they spend most of their free time. and websites have to need to be interactive. You not only do you want to like have the bio, you don't want to just have the bio of a storyteller. You want to have links so they can hear one of the stories. You want to have articles on storytelling, an article that features that storyteller. You might want to have that storyteller write something for the blog that's on your website. You want to have as much learning going on from your website so that they understand what they're going to experience before they get there.
You listed three things, and I've only got two. Are those in the notes?
Well, it's things like you want to have audio so they can, or video. Mm-hmm. You want to have links to have audio and video. Mm-hmm. You can have them write on your blog. People, they don't want to just know that this person won the,
Lifetime Achievement Award.
Lifetime Achievement, right. They want to know what the person's favorite book is, you know, what books they're reading, or where they live, if they're married, who their kids are.
The story they want.
Yeah,
the story.
Yeah. So, and the other thing is you have to have tickets sold on site, on your website, volunteer on site, on the website, make donations on your website.
Let me repeat that, right? Because this I know most of us do not do or do not do well. The ability to buy tickets for the event on your website. The ability to volunteer, right? One click takes you to, on the volunteer takes you to, right, the organization.
And not just to say you want to volunteer. They want to sign up for a specific task and
a specific time.
A specific, you know, so they know what they're doing.
And the ability to donate, right? And, you know, there are a lot of intermediate donation options, right? In Minnesota, we have Give Minnesota. I'm sure there's some version of Give that program in most states.
Well, there's also
Kickstart. There's...
Something like Give Well or Do Good.
Good, right. There are lots of intermediary organizations that you can hook up to, you know, will allow people to donate by PayPal or by credit card to your organization.
Right. There's one tied to GuideStar, and I can't think of what it is right this minute. That's the one we used to use until we started doing it directly ourselves. Just Give, that's what it is, Just Give, which is tied to GuideStar, which I really like because GuideStar is the one that lists your 990 and everything, and people can do research on your organization. So to me, it feels like it gives it some legitimacy.
GuideStar?
Mm-hmm. GuideStar. Yes.
Ellen, I wonder if Rebecca Ryan addressed this. In my experience, and this might be geographically particular to San Francisco Bay Area, Generation X, they're not waiting. They might not know how to go do the arts, but they have no fear about starting their own. They might not call it art, but they just find each other and say, oh, we'll put on our own event. We'll start our own storytelling series. I mean, Dixie is a perfect example of this. They creatives will find each other at places like Burning Man or at other events and say, well, let's do something together. And they start dance companies and art installations.
They are not tied to arts organizations. I mean, they have no allegiance to arts organizations.
But just the aesthetic of doing it yourself.
Right.
They're happy to...
Right. That's why I think, like, the Speakeasy in Washington, D.C., or the MOUTH, all those things are very important that we have to start thinking about.
Mm-hmm. In terms of interactivity on your web, did she say anything about ability for people who come to the web to be able to post reviews, post comments, post that kind of thing? Did she talk about that?
Yes. Yes. The more we have one example of an organization in town that's not now doing that. It's the Indiana Repertory Theater, where they can post their own reviews, so you can go there to look at that for an example. Now, for Storytelling Arts, it's an organization I work with now, we do online ticket sales, volunteer for specific events, and we have a blog and we have an e-newsletter. We do not have a place yet for people to post their own reviews. But we have, we do have a place where, like, when the newspaper or the weekly or whatever writes a review, I have links to all those. But I don't have a place for somebody else to come in yet to write a review.
I want to say something, jumping off what Tim was said, in terms of people just start things up themselves. When I went down to compete in the National Story Slam, it was connected to the Windy City Story Slam, which is all started by Gen X people, and they pretty much said, we just really want to bring storytelling to Chicago. and the instinct is to be sort of like, kid.
Right.
You know, it's already here. But as opposed to being like, okay, this is, they don't know about it. That's not their problem.
Right.
That's, right. That's our problem.
Right.
And that sense of, we all create it. We all create, we all kind of come into the void and go, there's this thing I want. So it just, how to respond to that is
right
important.
Yes.
I'm jealous of you having a city where the Generation X wants to just bring storytelling to Chicago, because then I don't have to produce it. And I can just
enjoy it.
Go and do it, you know.
Their definition was pretty different than mine. but that's okay. I mean, that's wonderful.
Yes.
I just think the quick thing I would say is that some of what we need to do, we're not the only art form with this issue, but we need to lose the preciousness of being storytellers. We need to lose the, you have to come to us to a certain place to get tickets, you're the thing you're talking about, going, taking it to them, losing the preciousness of a certain building, a certain style, a certain way of behaving. We need to lose that preciousness and make it incredibly open and move from place to place to place. As you're saying, if they're not coming to us, then we need to be going to them. We need to lose some of the ballet is a great example of preciousness. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to dress and act and do a certain way. For storytelling, we need to abandon the preciousness of how important our art form is and start realizing how powerful our art form is and put it in front of people, whether it's at Borders or the Bar or the proscenium stage. Just kind of lose that. We're going to lose that. Aren't you lucky to be hearing storytelling?
I think part of that, too, is we're kind of passive, and the advertising that we create is driven by the event. And if we stay off their radar 11 months a year, why should they even bother to come out if we're trying to make two attempts and I miss both of them? You know, if we're making 12 attempts, one each month, where at least we're on the radar, we're on the social calendar, and they know to look for us at a certain time.
They also only plan out 10 days in advance.
Oh,
10 to 2 weeks. Yes.
Actually, I think a lot of people are that way.
Yeah. But, and, you know, also on your website, when they see an event that they want to go to, you need to have a button that says to invite your friends, like you do on Facebook, because that's how they're going to do it. They want to be able to invite their friends from your website.
That's a
really good suggestion.
Yes.
I was talking to someone about starting to build a website and to begin to tour around and so forth, and they brought up the idea of starting a foundation so that I would also receive donations so that I would also be able to go out and train people, whether it's children or organizations, so senior homes.
So you mean start a non-for-profit organization?
I don't know if that would be the same category or not. Would it be?
Well, yeah. I think that's what the person meant, was a non-for-profit organization.
Foundations are a particular kind of non-profit.
Yeah.
And,
they're
not
profit.
They give out money.
Now, one of the things that we've done, and I can't say that I did it on purpose, it kind of just has happened, but it's been a really big help, is I'm the executive director, but there is nobody on my board that is older than me. Most of them are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. So I use my board as a way you know, part of their job is to bring people, their peers, to our events.
Oh, and how did you get them to be on your board?
You know, it just kind of happened.
Oh, come on now.
That's depressing for the rest of us.
Well, you guys, because in the, you know, we're 22, 23 years old now, and in the beginning, you know, they were my friends. And now I do not know, I meet the board members before they come onto the board, but I do not know them. My board members find each other. So you can't tell me that even you guys don't know somebody in that generation. You know, and their giving level is not as high as school, and that's not even true. I have one board member who's probably, I don't know that if he's 40 yet, and he gives $5,000 a year. So, I have another board member who's just turning 40, and she's a single woman, and she gives $3,000 a year. So, and then I have other board members who, our minimum level to be on our board is you have to give at least $100 a year. And that's just in the donation. That's not buying tickets or coming to the fundraiser and stuff like that. And so I have some board members who only give $100. But, you know,
But when you think about board members, again, don't think about how much they give per year as a single year. Think about how much they would know, how much they can give over 10 years.
Right. And
and what they can contribute, whether it's monetary, I mean,
right.
Ultimately,
there's
a lot.
They're the conduit to the Gen Xers.
Right.
But what we do is, like, before we were going to do our, we were going to rebrand. So before we were going to rebrand, I went to public relations firms and marketing firms to look for some board members. And we got two. One from two different ones. And they happened to be younger. And they happened, you know, be able to help us with the branding. And then they have found, you know, like when they ask a peer to join the board. Or I have a board member who works for the Indianapolis Business Journal. And she's only in her 30s. She's gotten one of her interns to join our board. She's in her 20s. So, I mean, you know, it's just, you just have to look at it that way. Yes.
How many storytellers are on your board?
None.
We don't plan to.
No. We didn't talk about that.
Don't you have another, you've got the board members who are linked to the community, but you have some worker bees or you have some storytellers in another, no?
Not really.
No.
I just hire the storytellers.
Okay.
And some of them do some volunteer work too, but not. I don't have like a group or anything like that. Okay, we're going to run out of time, but let's think about, because the model, which is quite obvious when you look at the number, is that we have a lot of festivals. Festivals are not attractive the way they are right now to Generation X. So let's just think, I mean, that's not something that's going to pull them in. What can we do? What are some simple things you can do for a festival or a series that would make it more of an event that would attract Generation X? Just from the few things that I've talked about. Can anybody think? Yes.
Maybe have at the end like a discussion or questions so that they can learn to be a little bit of storytellers themselves.
Right. You could do that. Yes.
Ongoing, we do a festival at one point a year, an ongoing bar series or something that's more sort of in the trenches.
Mm-hmm. You can have a post-event party at a nearby restaurant or bar.
Mm-hmm.
Where the entire audience is invited to attend, where the storyteller is going to be there to mingle and talk. You want to have alcohol at your event, except for Janet.
Part of it is also making sure that your performers realize that they need to be on before the event happens, meeting and greeting the audience. They need to be available afterwards. And again, stop the preciousness of, I've appeared on stage and I'm going to my hotel room. We must stop doing that. You got to meet the audience. You got to talk to them.
Can you think of any, you know, what I find it interesting when I was even thinking about this presentation is, because we don't do a festival anymore, but we do a year, you know, we do year-round events, and we have a series, and it's the same problem that all organizations, I mean, storytelling events have in the country is that people tend to want to, we have our biggest audiences for the, I can't believe I'm going to say this.
Go ahead.
The funny white guys. The funny white guys. We have our biggest audiences. Mm-hmm. So, in order to...
What was the adjective before white guys?
Funny. Bill Lass. Like, Donald Davis. Kevin Kling.
So, you know, and I have to think about balancing the budget and all that kind of stuff. But if you think about Generation X, that's not their top priority. Mm-hmm. Laughing. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to learn. So you need to think, you know, it needs to be, you know, it's just something to think about.
Ellen, I know that's what Next Generation Consulting says, but considering the fact that so much of the moth and the storytelling now is
but
comedy.
That's because they're, but see, but they're being, that, they're learning, they're being involved. It's not, like, not every event has to include all three categories. Right. But like in the moth or whatever, they're getting to participate. That's a greater need than...
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I don't
but
think
I still think humor is a very... Mm-hmm. It's important this generation. It's a different kind of humor.
Right. I just think it's something to think about. I'm not saying that...
I don't think it's necessarily educational content. I don't know if that's where you're going. But I think it's... They're learning how to tell. You know, by seeing the other people on stage and they're in the audience, they're learning how to tell. So when they come back, maybe they'll get brave enough to put their name in the hat. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll go to another event because now they see what it's been like.
Something, I'm going to kind of move us away from thinking about specific events or things that we can do. You just need, like this year, we're going to try having three post-party events. With our series, we're going to try, I don't know, only three out of, I don't know, a dozen or whatever. I don't know how many people are going to turn out. I mean, because half our crowd is, you know, in their 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. and 10 o'clock at night, they want to go home.
Yeah. Yeah, but the rest of us will be at the Chatham.
Right. So. Okay, now this is something else. When we think about an event, we're thinking about, at least I used to think about, the actual event, you know, when the, you know, when the storyteller gets on the stage, the audience is in their seats, and they're telling the stories, okay? Mm-hmm. This is how people spend their time when they're when they're trying to decide if, what event they're going to go to, the whole, this is the gathering of information.
You might want to use a darker color than that.
I'm a terrible writer of it.
Would you write for you?
Sure.
Okay. Just wrap.
Okay, there's five phases. There's gathering of information. There's committing. There's arriving, there's the venue and arts experience, and there's the post-event.
Is this on your handout?
Yes, it is. Okay, I'm just going to give you the percentage of time that people spend on this because I don't think you'd be able to. Normally, I would have you guys try to figure it out. Gathering of information, people spend 20% of their time. Committing to the event is 13% of their time. Arriving to the event is 13% of their time.
This is the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the audience. 35% for the venue and the art experience, and 20% for the post-event.
Wow. That's, yeah.
So you need to be thinking about, you want audience members?
Exactly.
You want audience members? You need to be, this gathering of information, this is why your website is so important. Committing, that's why having invite a friend on your website is so important.
Or being able to buy tickets.
Or being able to buy tickets on your website is so important, right. When people arrive to the venue, you want it to be, you know, when it, I mean, if it's down in the basement of a church or you have to, you know, wander, you know, you need to be thinking about the venue arriving. Is it inviting? What can you do to make it more personal, more social? The venue and the art experience, we spend a lot of time on that already, I think. And then the post-event.
It's really helpful to think of it as crafting the story of their journey through your event.
Right.
The same way you would craft a journey through the story, this is crafting the story of their experience of you from the very first moment they hear it.
Yes.
How did they gather that information to come up with that percentages? Did they ask them, how much time do you spend on the web?
Yes.
Deciding on events?
Yes. And, you know, and I had the research document, and somehow I think it didn't get from my father's truck into my suitcase or something, so that you guys could look at it.
Could you say a little more about the post-event? Other than just talking to the artists, is there more?
Well, people spend, this is what this is saying, is that audience members spend 20% of their evening, or the whole thing, they might go out with their friends. It doesn't have anything to do with, it might not have anything to do with your event. But 20% of their evening is spent post-event. So it's important. So you might want to capitalize on that. Mm-hmm. And how can you make their post-event more enjoyable?
Another way of thinking about post-event is data collection, right? So again, if they've been to an event, you know, for you to ask them afterwards, by if you've captured their email or if you've got a Facebook page, you can ask people, what was your experience, right? And you give them an opportunity to speak to it, again, write reviews, you know. Part of that post experience is to get them to talk about what the experience was, A, because it gives you valuable feedback around future programming, and B, it helps build the social connections.
Right. You want them to, you know, you want them to go on Facebook and talk about going to a storytelling event, or if you have an arts entertainment person who has a blog, you would like them to, your audience members to blog about it. But also, this is where you have, I don't know, when the event's over, if you want to have a cash bar and some appetizers right at your event so people will stay around and talk to the artist, or you go to another, you know, if people are going to go out afterwards, why not have them go to where you're going to be, where they can socialize and get to know you and other people involved in the organization. But I was really surprised by these numbers myself, because I think I probably, you know, spent most of my time, I mean, I think about marketing, but I don't think, I never thought about that.
That's, yeah, wow. Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going to, there's more details in this handout, and there's some references in here. And you guys can talk to me anytime you want.
Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about I'm not quite sure how I would define it. So in May of this year, I was one of the keynote speakers at a conference called BrandWorks University in Madison, Wisconsin, for Fortune 500 companies, specifically designed to about how do you build brand and brand loyalty. And my function was to talk about the power of story. I followed Frank Lutz, the Republican pollster and the guy who created the death piano mime, who bombed. Frank was talking about data and data collection, and he bombed because he had Republican jokes in a Mac world, I mean, half the audience were sitting there tweeting while the conference was going on, and Frank was wrong for them. There are a number of things about this conference that were really fabulous, most of which are the notes that I'm passing out. But one of the things I will say is the chief scientist from Amazon was there. And he talked about the fact that, in fact, privacy is gone.
Yeah.
And we just need to get over the idea of privacy. that every single time you use a credit card, every time you make a phone call, every phone these days does have a GPS signal. Someone is monitoring every call, every use, every transaction. Every time you use the ATM, someone is monitoring that data, collecting that data, and trying to build marketing to have it respond to you. And he pointed out that Amazon uses a lot of... the Amazon's data is voluntary. Everything Amazon collects and everything Amazon presents, all their algorithms are based on voluntary offerings. Think about that in terms of we did data collection this morning, and it was voluntary, right? And if we were to continue to do data collection and repeatedly do data collection, we would have a big bank of knowledge about who we are and about what our interests are, and we could begin to then tailor what we do as a SIG or what we do as an organization to meet our customer needs based on voluntary data surrender. The guy from Amazon pointed out that the federal government is collecting on an involuntary basis, and they're collecting about 6 times as much information as any organization or corporation is. So privacy is gone. But let's go to these notes, because I'm only going to take 15 minutes here. I'm not going to go through most of this, but I do want to go through the very first piece. If the function of everyone in this room is to support storytelling as an art, if that's where we start, it doesn't make any difference to me whether you're doing a festival, whether you're doing a series, whether you're doing an educational program. If you are here because you are committed to the idea of storytelling as an art or as an application, either way, then this first two pieces are something you need to spend time thinking about. Simon Ewens of Tesco and Fresh and Easy was there, and he made it so clear, right? The core principle of brand development is to create value for customers to earn their lifelong loyalty. That is the question that has come up over and over and over again in the storytelling community, and for the baby boom generation, we have earned lifelong loyalty for a small, specific segment, which is getting older, right? The question is, how do we get brand lifelong loyalty from other segments? All right? And so, from an organizational standpoint, this is, Simon says, how do you get that as an organization? How do you get that as an organization? You begin by listening to people and responding to their concerns. Much of the conference was about listening. Again, voluntary data collection and surrender is a form of listening. But more importantly, talking to the customer about the customer experience repeatedly. What Eric is going to talk about, what Sean is going to be talking about, is part of that process. How do you give people opportunities to speak directly to what is their experience, what do they want? We identify the challenge. We create a value statement that addresses the challenge. I would be willing to bet that most people in this room have not created a value statement about their art experience. What is it that you actually are presenting to the customer? we develop a policy that embodies the values statement. So if I'm producing a thing called Two Chairs Telling, my value statement is it is valuable to put two narrative artists on stage for 90 minutes without censorship, requiring them only to go back and forth and to let the chemistry happen. If that's my value statement, right, then the policy that embodies it is I will select people based on good chemistry. I will not censor them. I will market it to an audience as expect the unexpected, allow for whimsy. Even a train wreck will be interesting. I've only had one or two, but by God, they were interesting.
The percentage of post-event went up on those.
I'm
going to
ask a question. So from something that I just went to, the value statement would have more to do with the value that you're placing on for the audience. And
what the value? Yeah, the value statement is about what they get out of it.
But to me, I'm not sure that what you said says that. I'm just throwing that out.
Well, no. I mean, if I were going to frame it from the audience perspective, the value statement for Two Chairs Telling is that they will have a good storytelling experience. They will have a good oral narrative experience. I would even frame it that way. Right? Because not everybody I'm using is a storyteller. I'm also using musicians, rappers, hip-hop artists, politicians, right?
Well, you also have, I mean, it seems like yours is very much, they will experience more than one style in an evening.
Right. Okay. I want to get to these next two points, a couple of points here, because this is fairly important, again, about what we do as organizations, right? We will put procedures or processes in place to make the policy consistent, effective, and successful. So when the question is asked, how many storytellers do you have on the board? And the answer is none. You know, that's an example of, in order to be successful and effective and consistent, we don't have storytellers on the board. Because what they bring to the board is not as important, even though we're supporting the art, than what other people do bring to the board. The function of the board is not to argue about what storytellers we should present. The function of the board is to build the organization support in the community, financially, market-wise, culture-wise, to build a culture of participation. We wire the procedures into job descriptions, then train and evaluate. Now, for a lot of us, we don't have paid staff, but that doesn't mean that for volunteers that we shouldn't train. I have one person who volunteers to do the box office for Two Chairs Telling. You know, and she and I, before she started doing box office, we had extended conversation about what my expectations were. She gets why we're doing this. And she's happy to do it. She even goes further. She voluntarily has been digitally taping every performance and then makes, you know, CDs for me to then give to the performers as well as document the performances. So I've got 3 years of, you know, Two Chairs Telling now as a CD collection. And if I wanted to take the time or I found another volunteer, they could go and extract from that smaller pieces that we could upload or make available as blog or download content. We haven't done that because, you know, I've been lazy and haven't even done the website. Yeah. But that's coming because I recognize I need to have that coming. Right. Everything that Ellen talks about, I recognize what I haven't done and which I need to do in the next year, you know, and which I've, you know, just got to force myself to do. Right. Now, I want to segue here to something from Steve Denning. How many people here know who Steve Denning is? Okay. For those of you who don't, Steve Denning was a guy who was working for the World Bank and came upon storytelling as a way of doing knowledge management and organizational management. and jumped on that bandwagon and transformed how the World Bank thought about what they did. Then he left the World Bank, and now he is a consultant. He is responsible for an annual conference at the Smithsonian about storytelling in organizations. And he's morphed into talking about radical management. People are saying, well, you're leaving storytelling. And he keeps saying, no, I'm not leaving storytelling. I'm talking about how storytelling gets embedded in organizations. And that's this. And I, again, in terms of thinking about what Ellen just said, just go through these principles and ask yourself, in terms of the work we are doing, as producers of art experience, whether it be the applied, whether it be, you know, residencies, whether it be programming, whether it be festivals, whether it be series, whether it be slams, whether it be fringes. What happened? Just think about these in relationship to that work. We put more emphasis on delighting clients as the goal of all our work. Mm. Delighting clients, right? Having the audience experience drives the work. We focus more on clients' needs than on working software. The end user experience trumps product development. It is not about having the perfect event. It is about having a good experience. Right? Mm-hmm. We provide a rationale for the use of self-organizing teams. For large, this really applies to large organizations, but it also applies to small organizations. If the board or if one or two people are doing everything, you're missing an opportunity for a self-organizing team. You're missing an opportunity to engage, right, potential volunteers or Gen Xers or others. When it's time to do celebration, you know, I'm not going to do all the work. I'm going to find people and say, have at it. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, we'll figure out some way around the problem later. Strengthening the emphasis on transparency. Boy, now there's a big one. Make what we do visible to people so that there's an invitation to participate and an understanding of, you know, where the money comes from and where the money goes. This is one of the principles of development. Right? You get people to give. And what people do not give to abstracts. They give to specifics. Mm-hmm. People give not even to organizations. They give to a particular person in the organization or a particular moment in the organization. I am committed to X. I am committed to you because you asked me. Right? Mm-hmm. The way you increase transparency, the way you increase giving is by increasing the transparency so that I know that if you ask me for money and I give it to you, this is where it goes. It is how I sell things to funders. It is how I sell things to sponsors. It isn't simply a matter of your name's going to appear on the stage. It's a matter of, you know, you're participating in this process. Particularly if we're talking about sponsors. They want the transparency, not of necessarily of saying, oh, we gave to this, but of being seen as participating in this. Hmm. Right now, there's a huge, interesting controversy going on around Target Corporation. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Because Target Corporation has had a history of providing gay, lesbian, you know, transgender support. But they recently made a contribution to a political campaign to a guy who's blatantly anti-gay and running for governor. You know? And it has blown up in their face. Mm-hmm. And now they're backtracking like crazy to say, we're still on the pro-gay agenda.
We rarely support every piece of the platform of any candidate that we donate to.
That's the quote, right there, directly. Right? Yeah. Transparency. Yeah. Transparency is a double-edged sword. Yes and no. Mm. And then finally, again, this goes back to the whole thing we're talking about, more explicit emphasis on interactive communication internally and externally. The ongoing conversation about what it is we do, why we're doing it, how you participate, what your experience is.
The big overarching theme that I'm hearing from both you and from Ellen is about sharing ownership. That notion of building relationship and sharing ownership of your organization and your event and not holding on to it so tightly that that people aren't allowed in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, yes. And in the 4 minutes I've got left, I want to just, if you turn to the 6 principles of ethical influence, I want to emphasize just a couple of things, because this is all these notes are interesting, but there are a couple of things I really do want to underline. Principle number 1, reciprocal. You give something away before you ask people to give something back. So if you know, you give, right, you give a ticket before you ask for people to loyalty to come to a second conference, a concert. If people go to your website, there's some information available. There's something that they can have, and after that, then you ask them to surrender the data.
Lauren,
yeah.
Tell them about your car person who you gave a ticket. When you rented the car.
Oh, okay. So Howard and I are doing 55 minutes of sex, drugs, and audience participation right at Theater Asylum on Santa Monica Boulevard tonight, tomorrow night, Saturday night. We're at the rental car counter, and we're chatting with the clerk at the rental counter, and she asks why we're in town, and I hand her a card, right? Number 1, always have the material available. I hand her a card. And I say, you should come to this. And she looks at this and she says, wow, Saturday night. I'm not working Saturday night. I could come. And Howard says, here, we'll comp you. And he writes on the card, comp plus 1, Howard Lieberman.
No.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
You said, well, but she, and then she said, can I bring my boyfriend? And you said, we'll comp you 1. And
No. But how it really happened is I said, we'll comp you. And she said, can I bring my boyfriend? We'll comp you plus 1. Right.
Okay, I heard it differently. I thought she agreed to come and pay.
But well, she you know, and I said, well, we can comp you 1, and she said, well, that's fair. We could pay for 1, but Howard had already written comp plus 1, and so that was fine.
All right, well,
nonetheless, the point is that
in the door.
We're willing to comp her to get her in the door, because you know, on the likelihood that not only will she come with her boyfriend, but they'll ask someone else.
Yeah, Jeff.
I work for the Parks Department in Honolulu, and we have a 3-night festival that's funded by the Parks Department. But I always send out press releases and chat up the radio shows for call-ins. The result is I give everybody who hears it a free ticket. Wow. It's a free event! But it's it's PR.
Yeah, that's right.
So the radio guys have fun with that and jabber it up. And you know, everybody that calls gets a free ticket. Oh, well, they call.
There's one way that I'd like to find out this a little further. I'm a believer that opening night of whatever you're doing, if you're doing extended run, it's critical to get people there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'll pretty much cripple. I'll pretty much comp everybody. I'll pretty much comp anybody who will come opening night. Because if you fill a house opening night, even if half those people are there for free, the word gets out.
That's
the best. Because I can talk about my show, but someone else talking about it's much better.
All right. So I'm already at the edge of time. I need to talk. Just touch on these other 2 things. Scarcity. If I can't have it, I want it is the principle. And the deal is that, you know, I don't say, oh, I'm discounting the ticket by 20%. What I say is, buy now before the price goes up. You know, and I thought about that, but when they were talking about it, when they were going through the examples at the conference, it made perfect sense. When you, again, it, one of the things the studies they had done is servers, right, waiters and waitresses who came to the table when they presented the bill, if they brought a mint and put the mint down, right, they got better tips.
Wow.
Same study. The servers who got down on their knees and looked people in the eye when taking orders
got better tips.
Got even better tips.
Right? But again, the idea of scarcity is the way you frame it as it is valuable, it is important, and it is of limited quality or limited time. You know? And again, if you're going to do a one-time event, you say, oh, this time only. Mm. Now. Mm. Act now. Right? And then finally, authority. And I just want to make one point around authority, which is this. I always do the bad news first. Always do the, because the studies have shown that when people hear bad news and good news, whatever they hear second, they remember, and they forget what they hear first, or they downplay what they hear first. So if you're going to do bad news, do the bad news. Yes, we did not meet our budget, but we have a plan in place to improve our circumstances, right? Over and over again when I work with organizations, I see them making, saying, well, such and such, but then put the bad news first, end every statement, that's a comparative with the positive and with the affirmative.
Don't make excuses?
You don't need to make excuses. That's right. Okay, I'm done with my segment. Now, I will just say, we have coffee, we have various kinds of fruits and stuff. There are restrooms outside the door. There ain't going to be a break. Okay. Well, okay, no.